Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The director of the show How the World Began, which opens tonight in previews at the Stemke Theater in Milwaukee, Brent Hazelton, says this play is a terrific new play that gets right to the heart of one of the problems plaguing our society today, the inability to have meaningful conversations and ultimately come to mutually beneficial consensus around strongly held polarizing beliefs. It's an up-to-the-minute contemporary piece of theater that is fascinating, thought-provoking, and ultimately heart-tugging. How the World Began opens today. Well, it's the preview. It's sold out, so don't go today, but it will be a preview tomorrow. You could go to it. Opens Friday at the Stemke Theater, as I said. And we have everybody. We have the whole cast with us in our studios here in Milwaukee and the director of the show. And we're pleased to have everybody. I had a chance. You know, I haven't done this. I haven't done this in years, but I saw one of the rehearsals. I haven't seen the play, but it was great to see the rehearsal, and it's going to influence the way I do this interview. Instead of seeing the production, I saw the production in rehearsal, which was fascinating, and I thank everybody for allowing me to sit in. The director is Brent Hazelton. He's associate artistic director. He started at the Rep as an acting intern many years ago. He directed the Songman Dance Man. We did a program with the actor in that last year. It was a terrific show. And Liberace, he directed and wrote that show as well. Thank you very much, Brent, for being with us and giving
pleasure.
Us the quote to start the beginning of the show.
Thanks
as well.
Thanks for having us.
Starring in this show is Deborah Staples. She plays Susan Pierce. She is a Rep associate artist. And perhaps you've seen her most recently in The Diary of Anne Frank. She was in Othello. She played Jean Louise in To Kill a Mockingbird. Oh, what a show that was. It was a great show. She performed the one-woman show The Blonde, The Brunette, and The Vengeful Redhead at Writers Theater, for which she received a Jeff Award nomination. She's a great actress. Deborah, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Ben Charles plays Micah in the show. We'll ask him to describe his character. He has an MFA from the University of Delaware's Professional Theater Training Program. He's performed, and I'm just giving little bios to everybody because their list of credits goes on and on, performed with the Pearl Theater Company, New York Classical Theater, Utah Shakespeare Festival. Ben, thank you so much for being with us.
Very happy to be here.
Yeah, and Marty Lodge, who plays Gene Dinkle, has performed in the Washington, D.C. area for 14 years with Arena Stage, Shakespeare Theater, the Old Globe, American Repertory Theater. He has been on lots of television shows, including Mad Men, Grey's Anatomy, Boston Legal, The Wire, and many others. And thank you, Marty, very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You know, and I will start with the rehearsal that I saw, because it was really interesting to me to watch how carefully you were interpreting the words on the page and the action that would follow from those words. I mean, you're taking this seriously, and you're taking it sentence by sentence, and I kind of forgot that that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's how you put a play together, Deborah.
Yeah, specifics. It's all about specifics, and we tend to analyze every word, every period, every dash, everything that's in the script as a clue. It's sort of like mining for gold. And the more we can analyze, the more gold we may come up with.
So when you analyze the play, as you're reading it and you're figuring out your character, do you have an interpretation that may be different than what Brent's has, and then you, the two of you kind of hash it out?
Absolutely.
You do?
Yes, and it's actually helpful when you don't see eye to eye from the beginning, because it gives you more to dialogue on. If you have more minds in the room, you can maybe come up with a slightly more interesting choice, a slightly more interesting interpretation. So it's kind of great if the views are not homogenous.
Mm. Which is kind of what the play is about, too. The views are not homogenous. What if you completely disagree? What if you're getting a completely different interpretation for a certain scene, Brent, from Ben, than what you think it ought to be?
Well, the default is always just what tells the clearest story. You know, what... Mm. What do we want the audience to walk away with? You know, what idea are we trying to communicate? You know, and that's sort of been our baseline going through it, you know, because as Deborah was saying, there are so many wonderful nuances in this play, and such a really terrific degree of ambiguity, where the playwright doesn't doesn't spell out exactly what every moment has to be. So we've had to and had the opportunity to make a lot of discoveries as we go along about who these people are and what they're all about and what their needs are and what they're going for. But it's, you know, as Deborah was saying, it's just about mining for gold. And at the end of the day, you sort of, you want everybody to come upon the same nugget. But the way you all dig for that nugget individually can be completely different, and how you arrive at that destination is a very individual thing. But once you get to that one place and find, you know, everybody says, oh, that's definitely my nugget over there, and mm-hmm. it's the same nugget for everybody, it's a great thing. And that's really where that level of specificity starts to really shine, and the story gets clear.
Marty, what's the play about?
Oh, you're asking the wrong person.
Oh, no, I'm not. I may ask everybody that question.
Well, like Brent said, it's about the inability to communicate, but it's also on a plot line, it's about a school teacher who comes out to Kansas after these horrible tornadoes to help out, and she's from New York City, and she lets slip her feelings about creationism and as opposed to evolution, and that kind of offends some of the students, and so it causes a big uproar in the town, and so they're all trying to figure out a way to resolve it without her getting fired and without the kids losing what they believe in and what the town believes in.
And Deborah, why would a science teacher from New York City go to Kansas to teach?
Well, she's a new teacher. She's just in the process of getting certified. She has had some difficulties in her personal life, and she's taking her life in a new direction. We don't know the specifics of all the background. I, of course, have made up my own story.
Oh.
But we do find her 5 months pregnant and single. So something has gone on there. Mm-hmm. And she's clearly taking a new path in her life, and she wants to help. She really wants to help. I think she's at a point in her life where she wants to contribute in as many ways as she can. And I'm sure she has a little something to prove, finding herself pregnant and needing to face raising a child, which is pretty daunting. So she has signed up for Rural Corps and has been assigned to this town. And she says she's very happy to come, and I believe her when she says that.
Hmm. And you made up the story. Did you make up a lot of different stories, or was it clear to you? And do you have to make up a story in order to play her?
You do have to make up a story. And usually you get some ideas once you read the script, and a lot of them are intuitive. You take all the facts that you can from the script, and then you start a creative writing process. And the goal is to give yourself as much potent material to work with as possible. So you don't want a dull backstory, because that's not going to feed the story when you're on stage.
Right.
So it's finding the right balance. You also don't want to make up a story that is not helpful to your relationships on the stage. So it's finding the right balance. Sometimes it comes to you very easily. This one took a long time.
Really?
First day of rehearsal, I told Brent, I don't know what the story is here. I'm not sure what she was doing in the last 15 years of her life. I'm not sure about that. So it was actually kind of fun to sort of figure that out together. And I've landed on something that I feel pretty good about.
Yeah. And let's talk about Micah. Who is Micah?
Micah is a 16-year-old high school student that lives in this community that's recently been ravaged by a tornado that happened the previous spring. And so you find Micah and this community sort of putting things back together. And Micah is very devout, holds very strong religious beliefs that were only strengthened by the tornado and what happened. And I don't want to give sort of what happens in the play away, but he sort of carries a lot on his shoulders. He carries a lot of sort of responsibility for what happened on his shoulders. And so he's already in this very sort of troubled place. And then this woman from New York comes, who is sort of a beacon of hope, could be. And then she says this thing that is in direct conflict with what he believes, and thus the play begins. So
That's interesting, because I didn't see the whole play. I didn't know that he saw her as a beacon of hope, possibly.
Well, you know, that's again, going back to Deb, you know, that's sort of a backstory that we tried to create so that we were trying to create a story where all of these people, and it's in the play, where all of these people are coming from genuine places of wanting to connect, needing something from the other that's genuine and truthful and good. And then what happens is their ideologies get in the way. So that was something we sort of a jumping off point for us. But it's there. I think it's there.
And Marty, the character you play, Jean, is an official guardian for Micah? Or what is that relationship?
He is. He's an unofficial guardian. Micah lost his parents in the storm, and he has an uncle in a neighboring town, but he chooses to stay here in Plainview, and he stays with Jean and his wife. And Jean is sort of an unofficial mayor of town, or he sees himself as that anyway. And his mission is to just rebuild this town and to help everybody come together. And so he takes this kid on. And he was never a father himself, and I think he sees himself as a father figure to Micah, and he really wants that fulfillment too, to help this child get through this horrible time and have a constructive life. So he's not the official guardian, and that leads to problems at certain points in the play.
Is he a good father figure? Is he a beacon of hope for Micah?
I don't know how Micah sees it, but he's trying. He's certainly trying. You know, he might be a little overzealous at times, but I think he's a good man, from what I can glean from the page.
Yeah, that's one of the wonderful things about this play, is you see people that really have good intentions, and they're trying their best, and they're flawed. They're all flawed. They're all human. So it's not idealistic, and it's not neat and tidy. The characters don't always behave the way they would expect of themselves, or as we would hope. But it's very human, and this is how we operate. You know, if you have a lot of time to sit down and plan your response to something, you can come up with a really good response that's going to make everyone happy. If you're on the fly, if you're being, you know, thrown something and you're not ready for it, you have a lot of other things on your mind, whatever the deal is, sometimes it doesn't come out exactly right. And that, sometimes people can run with that. And all of a sudden you find yourself misunderstood, you find yourself making mistakes that you wish you had not made. So all of these people, they are good people trying hard, and they're flawed.
And it's interesting that the offhand comment that is made by you in this play, this is a small town we're talking about, all of a sudden it's on talk radio,
uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
How
everyone's
so?
Talking about it.
Everybody's talking about
there,
it.
There's a character that is mentioned you never see on stage. His name is Frank Wheeler, and he has a radio show. And, you know, he's kind of in the community behind his back. You know, people kind of laugh at what happens on his show. People call in and that kind of thing. And but he takes up the issue, and it's just an example of how much this has affected people and how much people are actually talking about it.
What makes, Brent, this play different than Inherit the Wind?
Oh, good question. Yeah, well, it's much more about the human struggle, as we're talking about this morning, about people having these real needs and some deep truths in their lives that need fulfillment. And everyone, the thing I love about the play is that everyone is a fundamentally good person. You know, everyone has wonderful intentions. When characters are in physical or emotional pain, everyone responds appropriately, as you would hope they would, you know. So we have these examples of people functioning very, very successfully, you know, as we would want them to, as we think we would respond in similar situations. But when those ideological truths collide, when those moments become irreconcilable, that's when those relationships start to break down a little bit. So it's certainly not a courtroom drama, you know. It's much more about what people need in their lives, as opposed to trying to convince the other person that their idea is the right one. You know, and trying to change minds. It's just about getting some sort of understanding of where you're coming from the other people on stage, so that we can then move the conversation forward, which may or may not happen at points in the play. But Inherit the Wind is a much more, I think, it comes from a much more ideological point of view, and sort of that courtroom notion of the hashing out of ideas and what is right and what is wrong. And we really don't get into the play doesn't really spend a lot of time in ideological rights and wrongs, but spends more time in sort of interpersonal human. How do we function as a society? How do we come together as a community in light of these really big and reconcilable ideas?
Mm. Well, how do all of you answer that question? Because that's a really big, as you well know, that's a problem that we're dealing with so many issues in this society right now, to a point where we just don't listen to each other. We're screaming at each other. We're going to have a huge gun debate starting tomorrow. It's already been around for years and years and years. People are saying we have irreconcilable ideas about how we make this country safer. We have irreconcilable ideas when it comes to whether we teach creationism or evolution in schools. I mean, these are just banging into each other. So what does the play teach us about how we move beyond that, or if we can come to consensus, or does it deal with that?
Well, I think one of the great things about the play is that it is not a play that offers up tidy summations or pat answers or, oh, if you just did this one little thing, then the world would be better. You know, it paints a pretty realistic picture of where those conflicts live for people. And in terms of the moments of resolution, it's sort of, instead of giving us a clean, tidy resolution, you know, the playwright's sort of view of how the world should work, it really more points up where the breakdowns occur, you know, and when we are sort of backed into our ideological corners, almost as an example of, or sort of a cautionary tale, you know, when you feel someone pushing against you, the immediate response is to push back, because these are things that we know to be true, you know, and we all know how we're supposed to behave in those situations. You know, we're supposed to have calm, rational conversations and listen to the other person's point of view,
right,
and take that in. But how do you do that? You know, because we all have lines that we draw, you know, things that are issue oriented, that are fundamental non-starters for each of us. And you come in contact with people who hold an equally strong view in the opposite direction. And how do you have a conversation with that person without completely writing them off as backward or radical or, you know, some label that marginalizes them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's an impossible thing to do sometimes. But if we don't figure out a way to start doing it, it leaves us very little way forward as a community, as a larger society.
And what a conundrum for your character, Deborah, because, you know, what would you do if you had a student who's obviously a well-meaning young person and he's very smart and he's gone through great tragedy in his life, and here you are and you're teaching science to somebody who believes something totally different? I mean, you had to have imagined what it was like for a teacher to do that, and that happens everywhere in the country, probably.
It does. It's really interesting. Just going back to kind of combining the two questions, one of the things that's great about this play, I think, is we do see two of the characters over this issue come to a compromise. Two characters alone come to a compromise, you know, behind closed doors. And then when the third person is added back in, who is not in on that compromise, and how the steps that it took to get there, the whole thing is exploded out of the water.
Mm.
And you're back to where we started. We're back to our polarized corners.
And kind of like John Boehner's Plan B in the House of
Republicans. It's really interesting.
Right.
It does make you think in this.
That close. And, you know,
yeah. Right. And we're in this whole time of compromise is the devil. And doing this play has made me really step back and think about, do I want my elected representatives to not compromise? Are we going to find a way forward if everybody holds to their guns completely? I guess that's mixing metaphors here.
Yeah.
But and doesn't budge. And if we persecute our elected officials for compromising, where is that going to leave us ultimately? So that's one of the things. It's also interesting. one of the other things I love is this play shows us this sort of black and white view that I remember having as a teenager. When you're young, everything looks so cut and dry. Mm-hmm. And there are many hills on which you are willing to die. Mm-hmm. It just is, there's no room for compromise, and it's what I believe, and you're going to fight for it. And you look at older people and you think, They're soft. They've stopped caring. They're willing to compromise things. They don't see things. How can you look at this and say that this is okay, because it's clearly not okay? And we see that in this play. And I think we have to look at each other and say, what does that other person need? How can I give? And how do I give and still hold on to what I believe? Are there areas that we can allow to be shades of gray? Mm. Or do we have to really just stay in our corners? Mm. And I think that's another way that this play reflects our society. In some ways, that's all of us right now, is we're still young as a society. And we're going through that sort of adolescent thing. And we're willing to fight for it.
Wow, this play is working on lots of levels.
It really is. It is.
I mean, woo!
It is. Yeah. And also just having school-aged children and looking at how we support our teachers. I read this play and I thought, somebody needs to, his guardian needs to explain to him, sometimes teachers are going to say things that we don't agree with and that we don't like. Mm-hmm. And part of growing up, that's part of the education, really, is how you deal with that and what the way forward is with that. Now, that's easy for me to say because my kids are in, you know, a glorious school and everything. There are times when, obviously, parents need to advocate for their children. But I think there are also times that we care about our kids so much, there's this knee-jerk reaction to defend them before we actually know what's going on. Again, many, many levels, to this play.
For you as well, Ben?
Yeah, I would second everything Deb just said. I mean, yeah.
And what about Marty? I didn't see the whole play, but is Marty already there? Is Marty able to sort of see the value of both ideas and find a middle and find a goodness in both of them, or
yeah. Well, the character is Gene. Marty. Marty doesn't get anything.
I mean, right. Marty. Gene. What about Gene?
But yeah, Gene is an interesting guy in that he is very religious himself, and he believes in heaven and hell and the New Testament. But he's not a creationist, and he knows that evolution has occurred, and during the course of the play, he kind of finds out just how strong Micah's beliefs are. I don't think they sit around the house and talk about that kind of stuff. But, so he's sort of the middle-of-the-road guy who's trying to pull both of these people into a compromise so that we can just get past this and then help the town. His mission is to save the town more than anything. I just think that he's pretty open-minded when it comes to mm-hmm. the debate.
He also seems to be a really nice guy.
He is. He is. He's a little nosy Parker, a little
right.
bit. But he just wants the best for everybody.
Yeah.
He really does.
That's a good way to live. Want the best for everybody, huh? We welcome phone calls. We've just been talking here, which is fine with me, but we will welcome phone calls. Nobody's seen the play yet, unless you saw it somewhere else, but we can talk about the underlying issues here and the role of theater in illuminating those issues. We're talking about How the World Began. It's a fairly new play from Catherine Trishman, and it's opening tonight, actually, the previews at the Stemke Theater. We're speaking with the Associate Artistic Director who directed this play. We're also speaking with all of the actors who are in the show and welcoming your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We have an email you can use, and that's talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where you can go and we'll leave you messages about the play itself and the performances and easy shopping for you. And that's The Kathleen Dunn Show. And before we pause for just... Well, no, let's pause for a moment. And we'll come back and ask Brent, who's involved in the shows that the rep does, how this one made it to the stage. In a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour on our show tomorrow, Deborah was talking about education. We will talk about education. Our guest is really good, Barbara Miner. She's written Lessons from the Heartland, a turbulent half century of public education in an iconic American city. She's been a reporter, writer, and editor for almost 40 years, writing for the New York Times, the Milwaukee Journal, and a former managing editor of Rethinking Schools. So she will be with us tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Let's go to phone calls for all of our guests from the Milwaukee Rep. John in Madison is our first caller. Hi, John.
Hello. Well, for me, the differences between science and religion are irreconcilable. With any kind of theory in science, there's some degree of probability. In other words, there's a certain doubt. In other words, Newton was accepted, but when Einstein came up with his theory about exceptions to Newton's theory, it was finally accepted because the experiments indicated it. Nobody could doubt it. With religion, though, whatever the God says to the particular person that's transcribing his thoughts, it's absolute certainty. And if you look at the historical record, science has been proven over the religious explanation, not only Big Bang theory, but evolution on this planet, the Copernican theory, all of this. And there's a lot more than that. And the point is, religion really can't accept it because this is God's word. And if you take it literally, you have to say that God is the great deceiver to deny Big Bang theory, the evolutionary relic history throughout the last 400 million years, everything. You have to say that God is trying to deceive us, to take it literally. And even in the religious realm, what Bible are you going to accept? Is it going to be the Judaic Bible? Is it going to be the Christian Bible? Is it going to be the Quran? Is it going to be a Hindu Bible? Is it going to be the Buddhist Bible? And there's books and books and books of multiple gods telling people multiple things that are in exact opposition to other gods telling people that.
Brent.
Oh, you're going to throw that to me. I see how it is.
No, everybody's
That's great.
Going to get it, yeah.
Well, I think this is identifying the core conflict in the play right now. I mean, these strongly, strongly held beliefs where we say this is what I believe, and what other people believe I discount because it goes so much against my belief. That is a truth being expressed. And I think the question the play asks is, how can we as a society begin to make room for both of those truths, to actually not to blend the ideas together and we get into some sort of weird intelligent design thing. It's not about that. It's about how do we as people who carry those beliefs fit in a room together? How do we create appropriate boundaries for those conversations to take place? How do we encourage those conversations to take place? Because as the caller points out, I mean, these are strongly, strongly held things that get people, you know, it gets right to the core of someone's individual truth, what they believe in their soul. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a, the magnitude of that idea and the depths of those feelings is so strong.
Ben, how does Micah respond to that caller?
I think he would definitely take the side of, he's a Christian, and he believes that the Bible, St. James, you know, the both New and Old Testament are the Word of God, and that they are taken literally, absolutely literally. If you are going to believe in God, then you must believe that the Bible is Word from God, So he, you know, that's his point of view. That's where he's coming from. You know, it's been interesting working on this play because I don't sit there. That isn't what I personally believe, but it's allowed me the opportunity to read more of the Bible and to get inside how someone could think this way. Mm. And it's in myself I have more room, more compassion. And I'm just hoping that what occurs on stage will, as Bren said, create that in others, a sort of room and a sort of compassion for someone who just believes very to their core something that you do not, mm-hmm. you know.
The caller brought up so many different scientists. It's interesting that you read more of the Bible. Did what reading material informed your performances? Did both of you read, Deborah and Marty, the Bible? Did you read about Copernicus and Einstein and all those people too? No.
I don't really work that way as an actor, and certainly this character, his beliefs are pretty set, so my reading Copernicus would not affect the performance at all.
I like to do a lot of homework. We were blessed. We were given a huge packet of information that a dramaturg from South Coast Rep in California
really
put together to do the show,
really?
Which is a common practice in theater that you will have someone put together a whole bunch of research material.
Oh.
That's standard operating procedure. So they gave us a lot of stuff. We also now, with streaming on Netflix and that sort of thing, there is so much information available through documentaries, that sort of thing. So I'm a big fan of that. But I was reading a lot about statistics on what is actually taught in the schools as far as biology is concerned, because it's not necessarily, to my surprise, what legally is supposed to happen. So I was researching that, and I was researching some of the science, but more of what the beliefs are that are held and how those are employed in the school as far as education is concerned. And there were some pretty shocking things to me.
I would imagine. Tell me more about this packet of information that you get. Do you get what is it?
It's different for every show, but if you have a dedicated dramaturg, which a lot of large theaters have that luxury, they're going to pull any information which is pertinent. Mm. So for this packet, they pulled big sections of the textbook that the kids were using in this fictitious classroom. And then a whole bunch of articles from the New York Times, different things that they were able to put together that they thought were applicable. And it gives you more, more fact, of course, but also it spurs the imagination. So when you're doing that creative writing process to sort of pack your luggage with as many valuable things as you can before you walk into rehearsal, it gives you a lot of material to pick and choose from, make choices, think about things. The more we can think about things, the more possibilities there are.
Right.
It also had a lot of information, and this is the kind of stuff that I like to read, about Kansas and about tornadoes.
Yes.
And about what happened there 2 years ago. And, and this town, this is a fictional town, but it's based on some real towns that were just devastated, just blown away, literally. And so that was the kind of stuff that I really was fascinated by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You're going to have some really interesting talkback sessions from this play, aren't you? I mean, it takes in, look what happened to Deborah. She's, Congress and getting together and teachers and how we teach science and all of that. I mean, there are a lot of huge issues here.
There are. No, I think we're really looking forward to the talkbacks. You know, the reason, I mean, that's why you do a play. You know, you get up on stage and you tell a story that is in some way a larger metaphor for some universal aspect of human life, and the audience has a conversation with you while the play is going on, you know, what their responses are. And, you know, if you just leave it about what's on stage, then it's rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it in a room full of people, you know, creating a conversation with a piece of theater is what it's all about. And to actually then be able to have a literal conversation afterwards, you know, in that talkback forum is going to be, I'm really excited to see what ideas are going to pop up there and what people latch onto. Because for a play that is three characters in a single room for 85 minutes. There are so many ideas packed in here. It is densely ideological, but not in a way that feels heavy or weighty or preachy, because again, it's a human story. But at the intersection of each of these people are so many large fundamental issues that everyone wrestles mm-hmm. with on a daily basis. You know, I think the response is going to be fascinating, and the play is going to live. We've talked about this a lot throughout the rehearsal process, that because there is not necessarily a bad guy in the play, you know, there is no one set up to be protagonist, antagonist. I mean, everybody is an equally good person with an equally valid, strongly held view. Just what the response from the audience is going to be on a given night, you know, mm-hmm. which one of these people's sides are they going to be on? You know, is Micah going to be hated and vilified one night, and the other night, you know, Susan is going to be an inconsolable, terrible person, you know, or is the audience actually going to, we're hoping that they live in that place of ambiguity with us, you know, where they sort of feel that messiness of agreeing with someone's ideology, but not exactly agreeing with their methodology.
Right.
So yeah, talkbacks are going to be, they should be pretty rocking.
Yeah, I think they will be. Why this play? Part of what you do is to decide what the rep is going to do. You have lots of choices, so yeah. You chose this because...
A whole lot of reasons. This was actually the last play that got added to our season this year. And as we're sort of going through the budgeting process and seeing how much play we can afford, based on, you know, what sort of income we think that play will bring in, and if it's a story we want to tell that's right in the moment. And about, I think this was probably March or April, you know, just as all the election, pre-election stuff is starting to heat up, all the campaigning, all the ads, and we're reading plays, and this one just kind of popped at that moment, you know, not only because I think it's an extraordinarily well and delicately written piece of theater, but handles all these issues that were somehow reflective of where we were as a society then and where we felt like we would likely to be, you know, once the play would actually come around to being performed, and potentially even more so, you know, after the election. And I think that sadly is seeming to bear itself out now, that we're still trapped in that contentious place. But it just really felt like the right play for the right time. Had a great role for Deb, one of our associate artists, which is something we're also sensitive to in that planning process and is important to us. Fit the Steamkey Theater very well in terms of the kind of piece of theater we want to put down there. You know, something that is a little more thought-provoking, a little more challenging,
right.
A little more gritty, visceral
right.
piece of theater. And yeah, it just, as our artistic director is fond of saying, we had a lot of boxes that needed to be ticked for this particular slot, and this play just sort of ticked them all. I mean, it was really a no-brainer by the time we got around to programming.
And Ben and Marty, this is a debut for both of you with the Milwaukee Rep, isn't it? How's it going?
Oh, it's been amazing.
Really?
I mean, yeah, everyone that I've met has been so welcoming and wonderful, and being in that building where everybody is all under the same roof is really wonderful and pretty rare, you know. Most theaters have their scene shop somewhere else or their costume shop somewhere else, and everyone's in the same building, so you get to walk around and sort of enter everybody's space, and it really does feel like everyone's creating something together, which is a really wonderful thing to be a part of.
And how do you happen to come here? Did you see him in something else, or do you audition for this, or what?
No, we like I said, we knew that Deb was going to play Susan, and we needed to find the other two. And my fellow associate artistic director, Sandy Ernst, who has also been a long-term casting director at the Rep and just has a really good...
talented guy.
She knows a lot
Oh, Sandy.
Yeah, Lee.
Oh, I'm thinking of Lee.
Really,
okay.
Lee. No, yes.
Talented people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it is a talented pair.
Right.
But, you know, sort of gave Sandy the script, and as she's reading through it, sort of said, I think, oh, there's this, you know, this kid from the Delaware program, Ben, who I think is going to be great, and I saw him in Utah, and he did great stuff, so let's get him on video. We didn't actually meet, Ben and I, until he walked in the room for first rehearsal.
Oh, my, really?
I just saw him on a videotape that was perfect. I mean, just absolutely nailed everything I think we were looking for in Micah, so that was an easy one. And then Marty, we met just through a normal, I guess, audition process. Sandy, I'm not sure where Sandy first encountered you, whether it was an agent submission or
I just moved to Chicago in September. And,
from
L.A. I got married and
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy about that.
Good.
So, and I had just signed with a new agency in Chicago, and they called me up and said, the Milwaukee rep wants to audition you for this play. So I drove up here and read for Brent and Sandy, and it took him a little while, but
it took a minute. No, but it was, and again, you know, I mean, you see a dozen people in a day, and you know, the person who is the right person invariably will just, you just know that's the right person, you know, and you know, we always want to be careful about people we don't know in terms of, you know, what Ben was saying about the theater. It's a very particular environment in terms of how people fit in. So we were so after we had the audition and felt pretty certain that Marty was the guy we wanted, we were actually workshopping a new play as part of our new play program right now, and Marty came in and spent the day with us reading and workshopping that play. And after that, it was sort of like, oh yeah, now this guy's not only right for the role, but a sane human being who is going to be really good to have in the room and bring the energy.
I wondered about if that reading had something to do with it. I played George H.W. Bush in that reading. I was like, so maybe that's what they want in this character. Wouldn't be prudent.
It's going to be a whole different show tonight.
I think so, too. And you've done a lot of TV, big-time TV stuff, big series.
Just in the last few years, I like you said, I lived in Washington, D.C. for many years doing mostly theater, but then about 7 years ago, I moved to Los Angeles. And I've been on Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice and Boston Legal and Mad Men, and I was recently on a show called The Mob Doctor, which actually shoots in Chicago. So, yeah, it's funny. You know, you can make more money in 3 days doing that than you can in 4 weeks in the theater. So I've been trying to juggle both because I've found that I have to do plays. I have to have a rehearsal process and do it from start to finish. It's not very gratifying coming in and saying, Doctor, we need 3 more milligrams, stat. And then you're done.
You did a nice job on that,
like,
though. That was good.
$3,000, So I'm trying to do half and half if I can.
And Deborah, isn't it something to be in a position where one of the reasons this play was chosen is because of you?
It's a great honor. I mean, I don't think this play needed me to recommend it. I'm honored and delighted that I was chosen to be in it, but it's been a great honor and responsibility to be sort of an artist in this community, and it's something that I value very, very highly, and I take it very seriously, and I will continue doing that here as long as I can.
Yeah, I can tell you take it. That's a good thing to take it so seriously. And I'm repeating myself, but that's the thing that struck me, that people should realize how seriously all of you take your craft. It's just, it's a sight to behold. It's a very good thing.
Well, it's a craft, as you say, you know, and it takes hard work.
Yes,
it takes diligent application. But again, I think one of the great things about the rep is that there's just such a strongly held institutional mantra that we do the plays for the audience. This is not an artistic exercise for ourselves. This is not a, you know, we're doing what we do, and, well, the downside is that we have to have people come and pay to see it to support us. You know, that could not be further from the truth. You know, it is really about a conversation with the community, and it's a conversation with the community that we find spectacularly important in terms of what role a major arts organization should have in its community. So I think that dedication that you're sensing when you're in rehearsal is in large part due to that. You know, that it is not a thing to be treated lightly. You can certainly have a light approach to the work. I mean, what was that wonderful line that Rose Pickering always had about the way we did our things? Lightness of heart and seriousness of purpose, I think, was always her fundamental way to approach the work. And it's important, you know, because if your purpose is too serious, then you we can take ourselves way too seriously, and the fundamental absurdity sometimes of what we're actually doing kind of comes out. But there is purpose here. You know, this is there is something. This is all connected to something larger. You know, and what theater does for the people who engage in it, whether you're on stage or whether you're off stage, and just what Milwaukee Repertory Theater believes that should be and how it should relate to the community. You know, it's important work. You know, mm-hmm. and we're trying to have important conversations, and you can't do that by being lazy or sloppy, or you know, you just have to come to work every day.
Right.
And it's in that craft. I mean, the thing I love about it is there's almost this sort of a blue collar approach to the work, you know, mm-hmm. where you get into it and mm-hmm. you start taking it yep. apart and you thrash things out and you get your hands dirty. And at the end of the day, you have something that is crafted, which is kind of like my favorite word in the world to use to describe theater, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. because it is something that is created. It's something you make. It's not just born. It doesn't happen, you know, and the choices that we make are for really specific purposes about what we want that conversation to be and how we want to engage people, you know, and
yeah.
just what that metaphor should be. So, yeah, matters to us.
Yeah, that was nice. I like that answer. If there was a question, I'd love it. Like, yeah. I like what you said. We'll welcome more phone calls. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about a lot of things, but our conversation prompted by the How the World Began. Milwaukee Rep is performing that play, thoughtful, challenging play. Preview opens tonight, but the whole run opens this Friday, and it runs through February 24. So we have several people with us. We have the director of the play, Brent Hazelton, Ben Charles, who plays Micah, Marty Lodge, who plays Gene Dinkle, and Deborah Staples, who plays Susan Pierce in the show. You have a good idea of what it's all about. If you want to join us, and maybe one of those conversations, it's almost impossible to join, except that you can if you want. 800-486-8655 is the number. A couple minutes left in the show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, the president is having a conference, press conference, announcing his strategy on guns, which I believe is at about 12 o'clock today. We will have several guests with us to analyze that strategy tomorrow during our 9 o'clock hour, and we hope you'll join us. All right, we have a couple phone calls. We'll take them as quickly as we can because we only have a couple minutes left in the show. We go to Harry in Madison. Hi, Harry.
Why, hello.
Hello.
I live in Madison now, but I moved here from Kansas after residing in a rural community for 50 years.
Oh, my.
And I really am interested in the take on what the play is about, you know, the teaching, the conflict over the teaching of evolution. And having lived through the actual debate that was ongoing in Kansas, but it really came to the forefront in the, not in the last 10 years, with a replacement of some school board members that felt very strongly about creationism. And as a parent and raising children and wanting them to get the best education, I was so thankful that my own children had gone through prior to this debate that could compromise, you know, teaching of good solid science. And I would just comment that there's probably some grist for a really good play coming up with the current governor of the state of Kansas, Sam Brownback, who has basically taken his own religious beliefs that are a little out of the mainstream right into the state house, to the point of having sort of revival tent meetings on the right in front of the governor's mansion in Topeka. So maybe there could be a little bit more later on in another play generated out of this.
Yeah. Maybe you should write it, Harry.
Definitely. Yeah.
On that note, we'll have to say goodbye. There's no time for a response, but it's okay. It's a good ending point. All the best with the play. I'll look forward to seeing it in its entirety, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Really a pleasure.
How the World Began previews actually are tonight, but you can't go until tomorrow because tonight is sold out. It runs through February 24th at the Simke Theater in downtown Milwaukee. And we thank all of our guests for being with us. Brent Hazelton, Deborah Staples, Ben Charles, and Marty Lodge. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who produces this program. Great conversations are ahead. We'll be with you again tomorrow morning from 9 until 11. News ahead as well, with more on that press conference on safety in America. This is the Ideas Network.